Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm your host, Sandy Fowler, reminding you to head over to mightyparenting.com to get your free email series on communicating with your teen. Also, I want to thank you for rating, reviewing, and sharing the podcast. That is really the way that other parents can get these messages. It is the way that they find out about the podcast and get to hear these great guests who have so graciously shared their time with us. So I very much appreciate you being part of that and helping to get the word out. I've seen a lot of posts and memes about parenting teens lately, and many of them comment on how much harder this is than parenting them when they were babies. Yes, when they were babies, we were all sleep deprived, but when they're teens, it's harder because it's more about worry and arguments, and well, yes, sometimes we are still sleep deprived. But life is harder, and it's hard to watch our kids go through things, and it's hard to deal with their difficulties because they become ours as well. Well, today's guest knows life isn't always easy, and kids have to deal with difficult things. But he's here to remind us that those difficult things can be just what our kids need to create a wonderful life. His name is Mark Megna, and Mark played in the NFL for 7 years, and he now co-owns a gym and is a top strength and conditioning coach in Miami. If you look at his success, you'd never guess the difficulties he faced growing up. Mark is here today to share his message, Dream Big, Never Quit, which is also the title of his book. He'll share lessons for our kids, tips for us, and I so appreciate him coming and spending this time with us here. Mark, welcome to Mighty Parenting.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be on today. I can't thank you enough. Parenting to me, I'm not a parent, but I was raised by one, a single mom, and I was a child, so I understand very much what it's like to be a parent and to be a single mother just by watching my mom, because I had a great one. So thank you very much for having me on.
Mark, yeah, I appreciate you coming on the show. And in reading your book, I appreciated your candor in how openly and honestly you shared about the difficulties that you faced growing up. And obviously, you believe your mom did a great job, which is exactly what it sounds like to me. And I found that it would be very inspiring, I think, for parents who struggle in general and for single parents, because we get comments from people who have a lot of issues around being a single parent or trying to co-parent in a difficult situation. And I found a lot of hope in your book for people who are dealing with those situations or whose kids are dealing with a lot of difficulties in their life.
Well, that's one of the reasons I wanted to write the book. The book for me was, I'm very fortunate to be a part of something at Anatomy in Miami Beach in Miami, where a fitness wellness facility, company, brand. And I'm surrounded by awesome people. So there's a lot going on here, but I think because I interact with, families, moms, dads, kids, single parents, I thought the book would be great. And the book was great for me because I was basically, it was an emotional exercise that I've referenced many times before, because I was recalling things that happened to me when I was a child that were challenging and great learning lessons, but they were also like hard things to deal with. And I kind of had to go back through those things and kind of not reconcile, but make peace with some of those things. So it was a really necessary thing. And I wanted to be able to share some of the things with parents, because one of the guys that helped me edit the book, he did such an amazing job. He said, Mark, what do you think your book's about? I said, well, it's about athletics. It's about an overweight kid getting fit, trying to excel in sport. It's about bullying. And he said something to me for the first time, and this was like 5 years ago. He said, your book is about parenting. And it really surprised me, but it made perfect sense because you know, we're all very high on our, I think most of us anyway, are high on our families and parents and think we have the world's best mom. And I think that's an amazing thing. But just watching my mother go through what she went through, being exhausted all the time, working two and three jobs to try to make ends meet for my brother Mike and I, that was a lesson in itself. And I think I got an incredible education from her, watching a woman not make any excuses and try to do everything possible for her kids to make sure that they were out of harm's way and in somewhat of a position to be successful to what she knew. So I was very blessed and fortunate to have a great mom, really.
And that certainly comes through in the book. And you just mentioned now that you were bullied as a kid. I'd like to start there and talk about that a little bit. Would you share what that was like for you? Because, you know, bullying is increasing. And as parents, you know, this is a difficult thing to deal with. So for you as a bullied child, what was that experience like for you?
It was certainly challenging. And, you know, I think I hear people say sometimes, you know, a little bit of pushing and bullying and adversity for kids is good. And I don't necessarily disagree with that. I think one of the problems or a problem, it becomes a problem rather, that when the child, the young person doesn't or can't deal with those experiences. And it brings them down. It makes them have low self-esteem. It makes them feel less about themselves. And then it kind of sticks them in a place where they're stuck and they can't get out of it, because now they believe the things that people are saying about them and the other kids are saying about them. And, you know, a lot of kids get picked on. It's a part of life. I understand that. But as I mentioned before, if you don't have a young person with a little bit of a stronger mind, well, that could really push them into a dark place and to do some really terrible things to themselves, or, you know, think much, very little of themselves. You know, it took me to a place where I didn't want to leave the house. I didn't want to leave the house. I didn't want to go to school. I would tell my mother I was sick, and it got to be a lot. And I almost fell into a place where I can't play sports. I can't be like the other kids. I'm a loser. I don't feel good about myself. I don't like the way I look. And it's easy to say, just get over it. But kids don't get over it. I mean, they're kids. They're not equipped they don't have the tools to do those things. That's why, like, nowadays we talk about, you know, telling kids that they're great and building them up. I understand now why they do it, because, you know, the society believes not every kid should get a trophy, and I'm very much of the same. I think it's good to lose. It's good to have adversity, because if you lose, you have to figure out what it takes to be better and improve yourself. But at the same time, if you're constantly hard on a kid, they don't always bounce back, you know? So there's got to be some sort of balance in there where you're really hard, but you give them a little bit of sugar as well and let them know what they're doing well, and they need to build upon that. So you give them hope, and they get set. They start to see, hey, I'm good at something. I'm not good at everything, and I need to work consistently to be a little bit better, either in school, in sports, and whatever it is.
And I think that it's not only the what we're saying to them, but how we approach it. That thought came to me when you talked about it. You said, yes, give them feedback about what they're doing wrong, what they need to do better. But it sounded like you're talking about it as feedback. It's not yelling at them or reprimanding them because they, well, we're talking sports, right? So because they, you know, fumbled the ball or they struck out or whatever, you know, they missed the basket. It's not yelling at them about that. It's helping them to understand what they did well and what didn't work and what they could do next time. And that makes sense to me as a feedback loop for them.
Right.
You said, though, in the book, so you were bullied as a kid, and that was very difficult for you. You said in the book that you didn't tell anybody about it for a long time. And as parents, you know, that's something that we always ask when something bad happens to a kid or our kid, we go, why didn't they tell somebody? So could you share maybe why you didn't say anything when this was happening?
Absolutely. So two reasons. The first reason was, you know, I didn't want to look weak. I didn't want anyone to think that I wasn't a cool kid. I didn't want, and I'm going to tell you in the book, I talk about a lot of things that I experienced, but there are still a handful of incidences that I probably won't talk about for a long time, if ever. So, you know, it's embarrassing. Maybe I don't want to deal with it. Maybe it's so traumatic that, you know, I pushed it down or suppressed it so long where maybe that's the best place for it. And it's too troublesome to talk about it, you know. And the things I experienced, I don't think that any kid should experience. I don't care how tough or type A you think you are. Young people shouldn't experience some of the things that I experienced. And when I see flashes of it, it really worries me because, you know, you turn your head for a few seconds and a young person experiences something really terrible, really horrible. That's really going to stick with them for a long time. So I didn't want anyone to think that I was weak, and I didn't want anyone to know what I experienced because they would certainly look at me differently. That was the first reason. The second reason was when I looked at my mom at the end of the day and I saw how exhausted she was and how tired she was, and that I'm getting emotional about it now, like, and she's trying to make ends meet. The last thing she wants to hear is something that terrible that her son experienced. And I didn't want to put any more pressure on her than she already had. So I kept it to myself. And I'm not saying that's the best thing to do. I do believe kids should enlist the help of their parents and share those things with their parents. But, you know, it all depends on the personality. It's easy to say, it's hard to do. And unless you've experienced it, well, then you can't really speak intelligently about it. You know, it's easy to be a 30-year-old man or 40-year-old man and say, this is what you should do. But when you're 12, 11, 10, 13 years old, as I said before, you're not equipped.
No, our kids aren't equipped. And that's one of the jobs that we see, you know, in the Mighty Parenting community is, you know, how can we help equip our kids? Especially in this day and age where they missed out on a lot of these skills, the types of skills that you were talking about, those emotional wellness skills and how do they deal with pain and hurt and things like that. But in that view of, you know, as a parent, are there things that we might be able to be doing or saying as parents that might be able to help our kids open up to us if they're experiencing bullying or some other really difficult adversity in their life?
You're looking for ways to handle those experiences. Is that what it is?
Yeah. So, you know, maybe we see there's something off with our child. You know, something doesn't seem quite right. Maybe they're sadder or angrier or just not themselves. And we feel like maybe there is something going on. And obviously we can ask, hey, what's going on? But like you said, you know, as a kid, as a teen, and well, you weren't actually, it was started more when you were younger, but as a kid in that situation, do you think there's something that we could be doing or saying or another way of handling it to help kids feel more comfortable opening up to us, to tell us what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, having as many conversations as possible where, yeah, we've heard it before. If your child gets in trouble and they are so petrified of calling mom or dad for help. That's a terrible thing. Meaning, if they're in real trouble, they have to know that they can call you and the punishment will not be an issue. And we'll talk about those things later. But they have to always know that they can reach out to you regardless of the circumstances. Now, saying that is one thing, but the behavior of the parent and what they explain and how they explain it and how they let their children know that they're there for them, that's in every phase of their life. With my mother, you know, my mother put a lot of responsibility on me, and she said, hey, she didn't even look at my report card for many years, because she said, she brought me outside one day and she walked me around the neighborhood and she started pointing things out. And she said, you know, Mark, you don't have to get all A's, but if you do well in school, all that's going to do is give you a few more options than the next person. On the flip side, if you don't, you're going to end up like those guys standing on the corner who should be in high school, should be either working a job or in college or doing something productive in society and just hanging around all day. And that sunk in a good bit. And everything that she said, like if it was drinking, if there were drugs there, I was in a little bit different situation because of me witnessing what my mom was going through. And because my father passed from drugs. So I knew that because I didn't have a great relationship with my father and I wanted to, I'm not going to do the same thing when it took someone who I wanted to care about and wanted to have a relationship, drugs took him away from me. I'm not going to go down the same path, right? It acted as a deterrent for me. But I had very open conversations with my mother because she always made me feel comfortable and she would let me know. She wasn't trying to drop the hammer on me. She was just letting me know, hey, here's why you'd want to stay away from those things. And every kid believes that having a drink is not a big deal. Having a smoking pot is not a big deal. Doing a line of cocaine is not a big deal. But I will tell you that every kid I grew up with who started off just drinking beers in a basement is either struggling with alcohol or drugs till this day. Because it started off with one beer, and then it was beers and hard liquor. And if it started off with marijuana, the guy ended up doing heroin. And it sounds like it's not a big deal, but it's never enough. And we chase our next hit, we chase our next drink with more because we're looking for fulfillment and we're looking for a better feeling in the next drink or the next hit. Innately knowing that it's really not there, but they chase those things. And the only reason I can say that is because I grew up with 10 kids who did all those things. And they were all wonderful athletes and they were all wonderful people. And watching them come apart at the seams was a very, it was an eye-opening experience, to say the least.
Yeah, and it's really sad to see that. And I think that also ties into what you said earlier about when a kid isn't equipped to handle the struggles and the difficulties of their life, of things that happen that are hurtful to them, that the drugs, the alcohol is a place that they turn, as you said, searching for that better feeling in the next hit, in the next drink, in the next whatever. And then pairing that with, of course, peer pressure and those types of things is an issue as well. So it kind of all comes back to that idea of pain, which is something that you talk about. You say that, okay, yes, there were all these difficult things and we do need to work on stopping bullying, and we talk about that on some of our other episodes. But as parents, it's so hard to watch our kids when they hurt. One of the things your book did for me, though, was remind me that certain amounts of pain and disappointment can be good for us. And even when something terrible happens, as you said, the things that happened, you shouldn't happen to any kid. But even when those things happen, if something like that, God forbid, happens to one of our kids, that they can still take that experience and use it for good. You talk about using pain as fuel. Could you unpack that for us a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So what happens, firstly, what happens with a young person when they experience something like that, let's say they are abused. Either they're abused verbally, physically, sexually, whatever it may be. They experience it. It's traumatic. But the problem is that in their head, they relive that experience pretty much every day for the rest of their life in some way, shape, or form. And if they suppress it so far down, they believe that it's all good and it's okay. And they've never really dealt with it or learned like how it's affected them. So if you're not careful, if you don't learn to deal with it, and I don't know what that means, I got to be completely honest with you. But there's many ways to deal with those things or to work through those issues or experiences. Well, then you're going to be holding that like a backpack for the rest of your life. And I only know that because I speak from personal experience. Secondly, I use my pain as fuel and I use my negative experiences as fuel. And I knew that when I got out on the football field, that I would have a rage and an energy because I believed in my head that no one was experiencing those things like I had. Now, maybe they did, but there was, a handful of experiences where I'm pretty sure it wasn't the same, okay? But I will tell you that just because I used it as fuel and it gave me energy, it gave me a fire inside. That helped me excel on the football field, which at that time was a good thing. Unfortunately, when you carry that around with you your entire life, you have an edge to you. Now, it's great if you're a competitive athlete, but the problem is, although we often hear people can turn it on and turn it off, but the people who have that type of edge really can't turn it on and turn it off. Because when you have a rageful energy inside you, it's something that it's on your shoulder, a chip on your shoulder that's there 24/7. And that rage, that energy, that fire, that anger that fueled me from my youth through high school and college and professional football, it was wonderful when I was on the field. Unfortunately, when I got off the field, it didn't exactly go away. And I wasn't the most level-headed or calm person in the world. And at the time, it's cool because you're a tough guy and you think you're the man or the guy. But then you realize those skills really aren't going to get me anywhere for the rest of my life. Meaning the rage, the anger, the fire. Now, trying to be better, pushing yourself to be better, to grow, to work hard, to have a great foundation of positive habits and work ethic. Of course, that will help you. But the anger, the rage, and the fire, that's not going to help you. And I only learned that up until recently. And we think that everyone says, yeah, no kidding, but it's not that you're walking around wanting to fight everyone that walks your path, because that's certainly not the way I was. But it's like you have a little bit of a chip, arrogance. You think everyone's out to take advantage of you or screw you over. And it's a horrible way to go through life, because that's really not the case. And you fabricate or make up a story like this to fuel you, and you keep saying it's fuel. Whereas all I see is a person walking around with unresolved issues who refuses to deal with their bag of negative experiences. Does that make sense?
It does. So what I'm hearing is there's oftentimes people will use that pain as fuel, which can help move them forward, but they need to also be dealing with the things that happened so that they can put down that baggage, so they can let go of, like you said, the anger and the rage, and just set down the baggage and move forward in their life.
Yeah, that's spot on. I mean, well, you know, if you're a bit bitter, a bit angry, you have a chip on your shoulder, you sometimes, you know, you carry around an air of edge to you. Does that make sense? And like everyone mm-hmm. that talks to you, you're kind of firing back, and you think that, you know, you deserve certain things, and it's almost like entitlement. Like, I was screwed over when I was a kid, so I deserve this, and I should be treated like this, and that person doesn't know what I went through, so, you know, I don't like them. Like, it's like we take all of our negative baggage, all of our negative experiences, all the abuse or bullying from being a kid into every future situation / friendship. And most of the time, it's like carrying an anchor. It doesn't help us. So you have to figure out that, you know, that happened in my life. I didn't enjoy it. But what I learned from it was, it was out of my hands. The only thing that I control now is how I behave moving forward, as I work with other people, as I connect with other friends and family members, and try to be a positive part of society. But, you know, we've suppressed things so much that we realize, years later it pops up and you find out this person had a horrible traumatic experience, and that it comes out, it rears its ugly head years later, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely something that people will carry with them. And it's something for us as parents to realize, and can even be the red flag that something is going on with our kids, is when we see that kind of anger and rage, or on the flip side of that, on the slowing down side, the sadness and the lethargy, that can be an indication to us that something isn't right. And when we find out what that is, obviously we want to help our kids go through it, but we also want to help them process it and manage it, whether that's something that we can talk through, or that we can help them with a coach or a therapist or someone who can help them process that, so they can set down the part that's so painful and get rid of that anger, that rage, and whatever. So as we're raising our kids, as we're parenting our kids, with all of this difficulty, all the pain, all the negative, is there a way that we can encourage our kids to, as they're turning this around, to kind of take that negative experience, but let it be a spark for something positive in their life, and in a good way?
Yeah, certainly. You know what they say about bullies? I had times in my life where I was bullying other kids. And you bully other kids because I was bullied to a level that, you know, I'm like, I better try to become the bully than rather be bullied, right? It's like mm-hmm. Eat or be eaten, so to speak. But I think at some point you experience all these things, Sandy, and you realize, man, if I ever have a say in it, I'm not going to allow this stuff to go on. And the best way we can add value to the world is I have to do a better job the way I treat people, the way I treat my friends, the way I treat my coworkers, the way I treat my team, the way I treat my family, the people around me, the people that I love and are important to me. And, you know, if you're mindful of how you're treating people and the way you affect others, you're adding significant value to the world in that way. Meaning, you know, I'm going to be a little bit more understanding. I'm going to be a little bit more empathetic. I'm going to be kind, and I'm going to make sure that, you know, every person that walks by me, I'm not going to be judgmental. And it sounds like all those wonderful things I just said, but it's really hard to do, you know, because everyone has a massive ego, and we're pretty self-centered, and they say the most important person in the situation should be, if I'm in a relationship with my wife, it should be my wife, when it's probably me. And I understand you got to take care of yourself before you take care of other people. But at some point, if you're in a relationship that you care about, or you're married, you have to really look out for the other person. That's really important. And I'm still learning those things. So I think you pull from those negative experiences and make sure you're not going to repeat them. And you're going to be a little bit more understanding than the people were to you as you experienced those negative things. And if someone's hurting, like, okay, I always talk about my mom. If my mom was in a room and let's say five people were picking on one person, my mom would do something to take the attention off that person, because she didn't want to say, hey, stop picking on that person. But she wanted to divert the attention to herself if it meant her, you know, self-deprecating humor, making fun of herself, or, you know, directing the spotlight somewhere else, because she was a very sensitive person, but she could feel others feeling uncomfortable. And I wish I had that skill. I'm still trying to work on it. At times I think I do, but at other times I think I miss things, and I don't want to miss things. Like, if someone's hurting, I want to be there to help them. And I want to be able to recognize those things before anything goes negative, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And like you said, you know, one way of helping people is, as your mom said, diverting attention. And different people have different personalities, different skill sets. So they might have another way of doing it. Someone else may feel more comfortable. You may feel more comfortable walking in and going, hey, you know, let's stop doing this. Let's stop picking on this person, just based on your life experiences and your gifts and your strengths. Everybody is a little bit different. And I think that's something that we can talk about with our kids. You said in here that it's important as parents that we have a lot of conversations with our kids, letting them know they can be there. They can depend on us, that we will be there for them. I always share the story that I have two daughters in their 20s now. And even now, we've just a few months ago, we did this again where we'll joke with them and go, okay, you know, if you need to call someone in the middle of the night from jail to come bail you out, who are you going to call? And we'll just say, you know, we understand you may not want to call us. You said, Mark, you know, even though they know we're there, they might be embarrassed. They might feel that they've let us down. They don't want to. Who knows what thoughts go through a kid's head? So we had them name someone, say, who do you think you'd be comfortable calling? And they're like, oh, Uncle Chris. And I'm like, yeah, because you know that he wouldn't tell us about it. All right, fine. You know, as long as you've got someone you can go to. But it's having those conversations. It's demonstrating to our kids. Like, you shared several things today that your mom was teaching you, even when she wasn't actively teaching you. You watched her and you learned so much from her. I loved this example of how she was empathetic towards other people and that she would step in and do something about it. That's more than a conversation. That's just seeing what happens. So I think as parents, what I'm hearing is we need to live well and show our kids that. Have the work ethic and the how we treat other people ethic and all these things that we want for our kids and we want our kids to do and be. We need to be that first for them and then have those conversations to let them know that, hey, we're here and we support you and we will be here for you.
Right, right. I mean, I learned this many, many years ago, but the greatest gift you can ever give another person is a good example. And that's exactly what she was. And she, you know, wasn't super wealthy, but she just had a good heart. And she was dealt a few tough cards, and she hung in there, you know, she really hung in there. And I think that when you realize the influence you have on others, like parents on their kids, they're not going to do, and we've heard it before, they're not going to do the things you say. They're going to do the things you do. And the one thing that I always learned from my mother was, you know, do the right thing. should always say do the right thing. And our next question would be, do you know what our next question would be? What do you think we would ask? After she said, make sure you always do the right thing, we would say what?
Well, my first response was, what's the right thing? But I feel like that's not the answer.
Right. No, that is the answer. That was great. That is the right thing. So, Mom, how am I supposed to know what the right thing is? And she would say, if you have to stop and think about if it's the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, it's probably the wrong thing. So the right thing feels good. If you have to stop and think about it, it's wrong. You know, develop, you know, the wherewithal, the mindfulness to put a stop to it. I remember being in a room and everyone was, you know, listen, I'm not a saint. I had drinks in high school. I just decided at some point to say, you know, I'm really not going to do that, because every time I came home, I would see my mother sitting on this little mini sofa in her nightgown waiting for me. And it was 1 o'clock in the morning. And as soon as I came home, she would go upstairs.
And yeah, that's the sleep deprivation I talked about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't that she was upset. It's just that she's like, man, I don't know. Like, I know. I heard someone say this one time. He said, you know, my kid is 16 years old. I'm really no longer a parent. I'm a consultant now. And I was thinking, well, that's not true. You're always going to be a parent, which is, of course, that's true. But what he meant was, when my kid's at a party and there's no adult there and they're in a room and there's no voice of reason and they're all passing around some drug, whatever it is, I can't affect them. I have to hope and pray that I've given them the tools and equipped them with enough self-esteem to say, I don't want to do that, and I can be cool without doing that, and no one's going to force me to do a drug, and I'm not going to feel the peer pressure. What I just said, it sounds easy, but it's not easy, because you don't want to be the leper. You don't want to be the outcast. You want to be cool. You want to be liked. You want to be in. And the kids that have very low self-esteem, they do it. They do it. They don't think twice about it. And they believe they're the cool kids. They don't look at themselves as the insecure kids, but that's exactly what they are. We know that. So, you know, at that point, you know, you're a consultant, and I knew that my mother, I didn't want to let her down. And I said, if she's going through hell trying to raise two boys, working several jobs, the last thing I'm going to do is add to her plate of problems. And coupled with my father having passed, I'm like, I'm not going to do that. I'm just not going to do that. And so I had a little bit of extra fuel to not do those things, if that makes sense.
It does. The other thing that I'm hearing besides these conversations and some of the other things I mentioned is the relationship with your mom played a big part in helping you choose throughout your life to do, quote unquote, the right thing, to help motivate you when you were in a difficult place, to help keep you on track, to help you say no when you needed to say no. That relationship was one of the key pieces. And that goes back to, again, what you told us about the conversation, that was also still relationship building, letting our kids over time between conversation and action, showing them that we're there for them, that we are truly in their corner. We need to build that relationship with our kids. So when they're out on their own, when they're in that room, they know we really have their back, and they'll feel good about themselves too. Just having a good, strong relationship with their parent does help the kids' self-esteem.
Right. And as you know, those relationships aren't developed overnight. They're developed over time. And we have a saying here, the way you do one is the way you do all. The way you do one thing is the way you do all things. So if the parent develops a relationship of setting a good example and developing a trusting relationship and is trying to be the very best they can to let that young person know, in every way, shape, or form, I'm going to be there for you. And it's not about being upset with you. It's about knowing that I'm always here for you. And more important than a punishment, and more important than you being perfect, the most important thing is knowing that I'm here for you, and you can always call me, lean on me, and I'll always be there to assist you and support you. And that's easier said than done. I mean, I try to do that with my family, and it's incredibly hard, but knowing that I have a few people in my life where they're not perfect human beings. I'm not a perfect human being, but if I called them and I needed them, they would be there in a second. They would be there in a second for whatever I needed. And that's how I try to be to my loved ones and the people who matter most in my life. And if it's like, who's going to be, Sandy, who can you call at 3 a.m. and you know they're going to answer the phone and jump out of bed to help you? There's very few people like that. Very few people like that.
My brother-in-law, he'll comment. He'll be like, yeah, who's going to run into a burning building to pull me out? Like, who really cares about me and not just sort of around or wants what I can give them or what I can do for them? It's like, who cares enough about me that they'd run into a burning building for me? I'm like, well, that's a litmus test, all right?
Yeah. I mean, he's a smart guy. I mean, that's the truth. It's like the movie The Outsiders. Remember the movie The Outsiders?
I do, yes.
Well, do you remember it? It's when they said,
I mean, that, in a vague way. I don't remember all the detail of it, but yes.
Well, they had two groups, right? They had the punk kids, and then they had the popular jock kids. And the kids that run into the burning building, they think would be the popular jock kids. And they ran the other way, and the punks ran into the building to save the kids. And that's the story. A few of them lost their lives. And it was, you find out what someone's made out of when your true character is tested, right? So I think your brother's a smart man.
And I know our mighty parents here are the people who would run into a burning building, obviously, for their kids. But for anyone who's listening and they want to get more from you, where can they find you?
I'm on Instagram at Mark Megna, MarkMegna. Twitter, same thing. I'm not a big Twitter person, so that's probably not the best place to go. Instagram, I'm on there. I'm on Facebook. Same thing, Mark Megna, MarkMegna. Also, I have the Megna Method podcast, and I just finished the Dream Big book. It's been out for several months now. Dream Big, Never Quit by Mark Megna. And there's a film out that I'm really excited about. One of my closest friends in life, his name is Randy West of Monarch Productions. He basically killed himself for several years making a independent documentary style film. It's called Just a Kid from Fall River. And then the film will be out on several platforms so you can purchase it. And that film is about my upbringing in Fall River, Massachusetts, me being raised by my mom. Talks about my family, being bullied and playing high school sports, college sports, the NFL, and then life after sports. And it talks about anatomy, which I'm very proud of and honored to be associated with Chris Pacello and Randy Frankel, the two incredible people. And I'm just trying to do the best I can each and every day.
Well, I appreciate that you shared with us, and we will, of course, have links to the book and whatnot on the show notes at mightyparenting.com for this episode as well. So, Mark, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your insights with us today.
Please. Thank you so much for having me. It was a real privilege, and it was great talking with you. Let's do it again soon.
Okay. Mighty parents, thank you for being here. If you like the podcast, then please rate it, review it, and share it on your podcast players. There'll be a little share button. You can share the specific episode with a friend, send it to them, tell them why they need to listen to that one. Also, remember to visit mightyparenting.com. We have the free email series for you on how to talk to your teen, some Mighty Parenting gear, and more. So thanks for joining us today and being part of the Mighty Parenting community. Remember, you are a mighty parent. You've got this, and I will see you next week.